At 7 in the morning in the town of Ely on the southern edge of the Boundary Waters, weary-looking work crews back from days in the woods have rolled out to hear their next assignment. In the U.S. Forest Service carpentry shop hastily converted into a military-style command center, a map of the areas hit by what's officially known as the July 4th incident is posted on the wall, with the storm damage color-coded according to its severity.
Assessing and opening roads has been pretty much completed. Assess and open wilderness campsites. That project needs to be done. So until these are done, our mission is not yet completed.
Just remember, there's water and Gatorade.
On this particular day, Forest Service worker John Pierce is sent out on a crew clearing the trail to Secret and Blackstone Lakes. He's been on work crews ever since the windstorm and has seen some of the hardest hit areas in the wilderness.
It looks like a clear cut where all the trees are down, lying flat out, typically all in the same direction. So the winds came along in the same direction and laid everything down. So as far as being on the ground and trying to open up a portage, it is it's like going through walls of trees. You just it's hard to find the portage, and you just keep cutting.
Around Blackstone Lake, tree trunks, many of them a foot or more in diameter, lie across the trail every few feet. Often the way is blocked by the roots of toppled trees, masses of earth and roots standing as tall as a person. All around, the scattered tall trees left standing after the storm rise above tangled masses of down trunks and underbrush. Devastated as the area appears, crew leader Pete Weckman says the storm's effect here was relatively mild.
I'd say it's probably a scale of 1 to 10, probably a 5. But as you can see, there's not many trees left out here.
It's a mess.
Terrible. Yep. Yeah, it's bad.
Each fallen trunk removed from the trail takes about 4 cuts with a chainsaw. The path becomes littered with sawdust as sawyers cut through each log, take a few steps forward, then cut again. Other crew members, called swampers, follow behind, heaving the cut logs and branches to the side of the trail. Opening this hiking trail is backbreaking. Crew member John Pierce says it's also dangerous.
Trees go down, they crisscross each other, and they're held up by other trees or branches of the same tree, and they're all, a lot of them are lying on top of each other. So if you cut one, a lot of trees can shift. They can spring back and up or sideways.
The sound of a chainsaw can carry for miles across the remote lakes of the Boundary Waters. It's an area where environmentalists have fought for generations to keep motors out. But so far, environmental groups have voiced few objections to the chainsaws. On the edge of the Boundary Waters, Mindy Latterell's family runs a resort that caters to both motorboaters and wilderness canoeists. She says after the storm hit, wilderness purists were among those calling loudest for the portages to be cleared out quickly.
I heard about people being upset that, you know, like, when are they going to come with the chainsaws? Because they wanted them cut, you know, and they were just happy that they kept cutting there and cut it because they were knocking their Winona canoes all to heck.
Motors are prohibited in most of the Boundary Waters except in emergencies. In the days immediately following the storm, chainsaws were essential to open portages quickly to search for and rescue injured campers. 20 were evacuated from the wilderness before the rescue mission officially ended last Sunday. Now, because it's less dangerous to cut tangled, spring-loaded trees with a chainsaw than with a handheld saw, the Forest Service has extended the use of chainsaws until the end of next year. Don Arnasty of Minnesota's National Audubon Society says the decision to continue chainsaw use after the crisis is passed is likely to meet more resistance than the earlier emergency use of chainsaws, especially if the chainsaws are widespread.
It would be a jarring experience for the next 18 months in a large portion of the wilderness for you to hear kind of incessantly chainsaws going.
The Boundary Waters have been the subject of more legislation and court battles than any wilderness in the United States, as conservationists over the generations struggled to get logging, float planes, and motorboats banned from an area set aside as a place for quiet and solitude. Arnasti says now the Forest Service needs to consider the need for quiet. He says the agency should use handsaws later when the trees have dried out and the danger to crews has passed, not rush in with chainsaws to clear every last campsite this summer.
What is it are we trying to do with this wilderness? Is it supposed to be a KOA campground or a Disneyland with so many beds? Are we supposed to have, you know, 1,000 hotel beds up there every night during June, July, and August? And is that what it's about?
Given the area's combative history, it's possible any decisions the Forest Service makes will spur controversy. Another major question lying ahead is how to deal with the fire danger caused by the downed trees. Preventing fires in the boundary waters in the past has caused a buildup of dead and diseased balsam fir. Now the fir is succumbing to a pest known as spruce budworm. The added fuel from the downed trees is like a wick that could light this candle. University of Minnesota forest ecologist Lee Fralick says there's now a greater possibility of massive fires.
The fir is a very flammable vegetation type, and then when the budworm kills some of it, you have a mixture of live and dead trees, and that fuel type will support a very high intensity fire. Balsam fir is commonly used as a Christmas tree, and if you've ever throwing your dead Christmas tree in the fireplace, you know what happens.
The storm-downed trees lie mostly in a narrow swath running from west to east, some 35 miles long. Forest Service officials fear a fire starting in this continuous bed of fuel could be fanned by the region's prevailing west-to-east winds and sweep over the wilderness's eastern border into the resorts and cabins along the Gunflint Trail. Forest Service fire specialist Paul Tenay says the agency plans to deliberately set some smaller controlled fires at points along the swath so that the burned areas can act as fire breaks.
Well, we're going to have to do it. There's no question about it. It's just, you know, moving ahead with getting the authorities that we need to do it, getting the plans in place, getting the dollars to have the equipment that we need and the trained personnel to do the job.
Right now, the Forest Service does not have the authority to set fires in the wilderness, although the agency is allowed to let naturally occurring fires burn. Tenay says the effort to win federal authorization for prescribed burns in the wilderness is now a top priority, along with removing downed trees around cabins and resorts on the Gunflint Trail on the edge of the boundary waters. The agency has requested more federal funding for firefighting equipment to protect that area.
If we can get those things in place before we have a really bad fire situation develop, then we can start, you know, going to the source, which is basically the fuel bed that exists within the wilderness.
The prescribed burning could begin as early as next spring. National Audubon's Don Arnasti says his group does not object to prescribed burns in the boundary waters, but wants the Forest Service to consider ecological values, not just protecting property, when it decides when and where to set fires.
We would be interested that they, whatever they did, was done in such a way that would be mimic natural processes, because what occurred here is part of the ecology of the area, and so would fires be. And many times controlled burns in multiple use areas of the forest include bulldozing fire breaks and other very, very disruptive activities around the perimeter of the fire area. And that would not be appropriate in the wilderness and would not be an appropriate alternative under any circumstance.
Where fires burn will shape the face of the boundary waters for years to come. The University of Minnesota's Fralick says the species of trees that grow back after the storm will depend on whether or not the areas are burned, as will the other plants and wildlife. But Fralick cautions that if you think of the boundary waters as a mosaic of different species, the small fires set or controlled by humans will only influence a few tiles in the mosaic. The major changes will come with a fire too big to be controlled. The last giant fire in the boundary waters was in 1910, and Fralick says sooner or later another one like it is inevitable.
Eventually, we'll have a summer with a very severe drought, and some fires will get going, whether by lightning or by escaped fires caused by people, and it's going to burn a huge chunk of the boundary waters. And those fires, the really significant fires, the top 2 or 3% of all fires that occur in terms of size, and those fires are really not controllable by any action that the Forest Service or anyone else can take. You know, we're talking 50 to 100 foot high flames. And those fires just play themselves out like they did in Yellowstone in 1988.
The Yellowstone fires and their natural after effects, spectacular wildflower displays, new forests and meadows coming back, the wildlife diversity in the burned areas, led to an increased public acceptance of fire in that national park, and it's possible something similar will occur in the boundary waters. Already, visitors there seem to accept the idea of change that is simply part of a natural cycle. David Barnes and his wife Edie have come to the boundary waters from Rockford, Illinois. They hadn't heard about the storm before they got to Minnesota, but David Barnes says they would have come anyway.
It's like the fires out in Yellowstone that burned, you know, and now they're reconsidering the thoughts about extinguishing them. They ought to just let them go, because the 10 or 15 years afterwards, it's just so much richer environment out there. And I expect the same here, that these sorts of things happen and have happened for tens of thousands of years.
So far, the Boundary Waters is not seeing a drop in visitors because of the storm, and may not if what happened in Yellowstone is any indication. There, visitor numbers have climbed steadily since the 1988 fire. I'm Mary Lozier, Minnesota Public Radio.